Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at pet cancer and how to find a vet that is affordable for you. The American Veterinary Association says that almost half of dogs over the age of 10 will develop cancer. And we'll be talking with our guest, Dr. Ruth Ann Chun. Dr. Chun is a director of the UW School of Veterinary Medicine. She's also a clinical professor of oncology there. Have you found low-cost vet care for your pets? What does that look like? Has your pet ever had cancer? You can share your story with us. You can reach in at 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Ruth Ann Chun, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us.
Well, good morning, Larry, and thanks for having me.
You co-founded the WisCares Clinic in 2014. Tell us about this vet clinic in Madison.
Well, thank you for asking. So WisCares stands for the Wisconsin Companion Animal Resources, Education, and Social Services. And we founded the clinic when we recognized really that there is a fairly significant population of folks that are experiencing homelessness that also have animals. And those animals are a really important source of companionship and security and you know, mental and physical support to those people. And they don't have a way to help take care of them when they get sick. And they don't have a place to safely house those animals if those people themselves need their own housing or inpatient medical care or a variety of other things. So we started WisCares back in 2014, as you said, as a way to provide free preventive and wellness care to some of these animals. And then as we sort of recognized how much more need there was in the community, we also went ahead and actually opened up an access to care clinic to try and address kind of the broader question of access to veterinary medical care.
You know, you think about Dane County. Dane County is a fairly wealthy county, high education levels, state of government, and so on. So you wonder, gee, is there that much need in a county like Dane? And if in Dane, there must be that need elsewhere as well.
Yes, for sure. And you know, Dane County has a lot of things going for it. We also have a lot of disparities in this county, and I know we have a huge group of people that are working to try and address those, but there's definitely a real need for folks that live at or below the poverty level right here in Dane County to try and help them. And one thing that we are really working towards actually with WisCares is by offering subsidized care, and the care is provided by veterinary medical students who are very closely supervised by veterinarians on site there at the clinic. We actually work with a social worker who's on site, and we have social work students on site. We actually also have pharmacy students that assist with our managing our medications and keeping those organized. But by having sort of an interprofessional healthcare team there, we try to raise our clients' awareness of what does preventive care do for your pet, and what might preventive medical care do for you as a person? Mm. And how would going to a doctor when you are, before you, it's emergent, how would that be? So we try and our social workers talk to our clients about, you know, what needs they might have and try and get them connected with the many resources in Dane County to kind of, you know, raise all ships, make everybody's health better.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool approach. I maybe have some specific examples of how WisCares has helped pet owners.
Yeah, actually, I can share some of the things that have been, we're really proud of that have been in the news in the past. We had a gentleman who had been admitted to the ER at UW Health, and he had very, very significant health concerns. And he was admitted to the ER. He actually got hospitalized, and he kept on leaving his hospital room. And the nursing staff didn't know where he went. They followed him. He actually went into the parking garage, and they recognized that he had two dogs in his car, and he was unhoused. He lived in his car with his dogs, which a lot of homeless folks do. And they called WhiskCares, and they said, "We know that you provide foster and boarding for these animals. Can you come help them?" And so one of our employees went to the hospital, met the gentleman. He was not very trusting of us and didn't really want us to do anything with his dogs, but knew maybe just keeping them in his car wasn't the best choice for them. So he let us take the dogs. He said, "Bring them back tomorrow. I want to see him again." And we brought him back the next day. He recognized that his dogs were happy, that we had good intentions. And he stayed in the hospital, had the surgery that he needed, was reunited with his dogs, and would come back to WhiskCares on a regular basis so that we could help him take care of, you know, their conditions. We also provide pet food and pet supplies. And so he was a, you know, sort of a regular with our clinic, working both with the veterinarians and the social worker there. It's an example of one of several that I could kind of call out.
Yeah. Dr. Ruth Ann Chun, our guest, clinical professor of oncology at the UW School of Veterinary Medicine. She co-founded Wisconsin Companion Animal Resources, Education, and Social Services. The acronym is WhiskCares. It's a community veterinary clinic for low-income and homeless families. Questions for her, experiences to share. I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Love to hear from you. And I like the partnership that you have, Dr. Chun, with local veterinary students.
Yes, we are. So WhiskCares is a program through the School of Veterinary Medicine. We have a partnership with the School of Social Work and the School of Pharmacy. School of Nursing is definitely interested in trying to work with us as well. And it is a wonderful partnership. You know, it's our veterinary medical students need to learn how to work with all types of people, and they certainly need to be able to diagnose and treat problems. And this is an outstanding learning opportunity for them, not just as a veterinary practice type situation, but also in kind of, you know, recognizing diversity, recognizing how to work with people that are different from themselves.
Yeah.
So it's wonderful, and having social work there, you know, certainly brings that discussion right up to the forefront in our daily work.
Let's take another call here. Vern from Eau Claire, we'll give you a chance. Vern, thank you for calling.
Oh, yeah. Well, one good thing, I never had a sick dog. I had quite a few dogs. But I want to tell you a story. I watched this movie. It's called Hatchie. It's actually Hatchie Cole. That's her name. So she was put on a train station by a Japanese guy, and the crate fell off, and so this guy, it's Richard Gere, actually, he picked her up as a puppy, 2 months old, whatever, and then he took her home, and she gradually grew up. She followed him to work to the train station every single day for 3 years, and then he had a heart attack, and he died. He waited at that train station for 9 years.
Yeah, that's an amazing story, isn't it, Dr. Chun?
It really is the loyalty of dogs and that bond between the human and the animal. That's a wonderful example of that incredible bond and what happens when it's broken. You know, those animals know who their people are. And to say for people to sometimes look at somebody who's experiencing homelessness and say, oh, you know, that poor dog sitting with them, that poor dog living out on the street, I think, well, wait a minute, turn that around. Think about that poor person who is lucky to have that dog, and they're both living in a very untenable situation. And that's exactly why we don't want to take that dog away from that person either. You know, it's that concept of they shouldn't have a dog if they can't take care of it. Wow, that bond is really strong. And that, Vern, thank you for bringing up that super example of why it's so important to keep people and their animals together.
And, you know, I think for all of us who have pets, I mean, there's a very close bond. In some ways, it might be even more of a need for someone who is like the person you were talking about earlier. I mean, the person doesn't have resources and maybe not a lot of friends. And so those two dogs in that person's case were extremely valuable to that person.
Yes, for sure. And they, for the years after he had his surgery, you know, that bond was unbroken for them. And as you say, they may not have a lot of other human friends, but that companionship meant so much to him.
Yeah, absolutely. Our guest, again, Dr. Ruth Ann Chun, Associate Dean for Clinical Affairs and Teaching Director at the UW School of Veterinary Medicine. She's also a clinical professor of oncology, our guest. You can join in with your questions, the number 1-800-642-1234, or email us to ideas@wpr.org. Courtney Everett, our producer today, Trina LaSousa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network, and a big thanks as well to everyone who donated during our winter member drive. Support from people like Lois McDonald of Madison or Carol Moore of Fitchburg, that powers the variety, the depth, and the lifelong learning you value on Wisconsin Public Radio. If you missed the drive, still time to join in with your gift at WPR.org. And when you do, ask for the new WPR t-shirt or coffee mug as your thank you gift and show off your support for WPR programs. You certainly play a vital role in keeping Wisconsin informed and connected. And we want to thank you for your important partnership for sure. Dr. Ruth Ann Chun, our guest today, as we talk with her about pet cancer. We talk about affordable vet care with her. And again, you can join us at 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Diane sent an email, wants to know how people can donate, Dr. Chun, so you can continue your very important work.
Oh, Diane, thank you for asking that. We take donations. WISCares has a Facebook page, and there's a donate button right on that Facebook page. WISCares also has a website, which is WISCares, 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 .wisc.edu. So we're part of the University of Wisconsin, and there is also a way to donate there. You could also send, if you want to, you can send a donation directly to our clinic, which is, the address is 1402 Emil Street, E-M-I-L Street. That's in Madison, Wisconsin, 53562. 53562.
There you go. Diane, thank you so much for that question, and nice to get that plug in there. Chris and Adams, we'll give you a chance to join in. Hi, Chris.
Good morning. I was on the street homeless with two dogs, and I lost everything I ever worked for as an adult, and I wasn't going to give up my dogs. It was pretty much all I pulled out of my situation. And they saved my life on a couple of occasions. Being a single woman on the street is not easy. And I just would like to thank you for what you're doing, and it should be a model for a place across the country where people can go.
Chris, thank you so much. Comment, Dr. Chun?
You know, Chris, we you are why we do our work, is because we know it's important. We know that how valuable they are to you as a protection, as well as companionship. And I will say that there are other clinics across the country that are trying to address this problem. I think one of the ones that I can think of right off the top of my head is it in Worcester, Massachusetts. It's a program called Tufts at Tech, and it is actually housed within a vocational high school, and they run a low-income access to vet care clinic there. There's also an organization called Align Care that's run out of the University of Tennessee by a veterinarian named Michael Blackwell, and they're trying to get the national organization going to provide very similar care, working with social work as we do. And then the ASPCA is also working on a program, the Humane Society of the United States, and it's called Pets for Life. And it works to try and keep pets and people together rather than having animals get surrendered to shelters. So there's absolutely a growing cadre of folks that are working towards this on this problem, working as collaboratively as we can with, you know, different funding models, different county models of support. But we recognize that there's a need, and it's quite a range of options that veterinary care has now for clients. You know, I'm trained as a medical oncologist, which is a very expensive treatment for animals to go through. And, you know, I recognize that there's so many folks that can't afford that. There's so many folks that really struggle to afford even just basic preventive medical care or you know, being able to treat an ear infection or a bladder infection. So just quite a huge range of things that we can do and things we're trying to do for people and their animals.
Chris, thank you again. Appreciate it. And glad to know your situation is better now for sure. Kay in Madison, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Kay.
Hi. I came on just as I think, were you giving the contact information for the clinic?
I sure was. It's 1402 Hummel Street. So I will say right now, we are struggling to take on new clients because we've been so busy. But we're on 1402 Hummel Street, and that's right at essentially the frontage road. And I'm just looking up our phone number, which I don't have at the top of my head. And I gave the wrong zip code as well. It's 53713, not 53562. 1402 Hummel Street. And I can say that our phone number is 608-561-7387.
Let's see, 608-561-7387.
You got it. Yep.
Kay, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or email us to ideas@wpr.org. Betty from Dodgeville is a retired vet technician, and she has unused pet medicine that's been opened. What's the proper way to dispose of it? Can it be taken on local drug take-back days? I imagine it can't be used like at your clinic.
You are correct. Much as we appreciate the thought, we will not and cannot take used drugs. Any used drugs that you have left over from pet care, just like with human care, those can be taken to drug disposal days or drug disposal drives. I think many police stations have drug drop-off sites, so that's where probably the best site to take them.
And thanks a lot for that question, Betty. Appreciate it very much. And you have this pet food and pet supply pantry as well. Do you know how does that work?
Yeah, so we are really lucky to work with some amazing sponsors. We've been sponsored by PetSmart, by Petco Love, by Purina, and a number of other organizations in the veterinary world. And they provide food and supplies to us. And we will provide people with smaller sized bags of food. So we break the bags down so that especially folks that are non-domiciled, that don't have a home to store all this stuff, can have good, high-quality pet food that they can carry easily. And then we get a lot of donations as well. We will take used, gently used leashes or collars, something that some folks on the street will get stopped or given a hard time for is if their pet looks like it doesn't have a good leash or a good harness. And we want to make sure that they're in a safe leash or harness or collar and that they've got supplies that are not worn and breaking down. So that they come to the clinic and we can put those supplies together for them.
And I would mention, we have a link to your clinic at our website. So if you go to WPR.org/Larry, go to today's date, and under program notes, we will have that information in case you didn't have a pencil handy and weren't able to write it down. There's that link there, and most people know that if you're listening to the show, WPR.org/Larry, and go to today's program and our program notes, and there it'll be. Looking at vet care, let's look at vet care in the U.S., and I have a couple of cats. I don't have a dog. I have a couple of cats. So I kind of know what it costs me, but what's the average cost of a vet visit?
Oh, gosh, that's a pretty loaded question because there's so many reasons why animals go in to see the veterinarian and get vet care. I've got dogs, and so I know from my experience when I take my dog to the veterinarian, for whatever it's worth, I don't provide my own vet care to my own dogs. It's just like the being a pediatrician and not providing your own care to your own kids. So when I have my animals in for vaccinations and getting heartworm preventive, the medications are expensive, and I'll walk away with a bill probably $500 or so for that care. And I want to acknowledge that I think veterinarians deserve to be paid for their services. It's an expensive curriculum for them to go through. It's expensive tuition for them. The medications that we prescribe go through this very similar regulatory processes, and so they're expensive to make and have on our shelves. So it is hard. It can be a very expensive venture having a pet and having just providing regular routine care for them. I've had animals that have cancer, and I know that I've spent, I don't get a discount for, even though I work at the vet school, I've spent easily over $10,000 on cancer care for my animals. And I'm lucky and privileged to be in a position where I can afford to do that. And I recognize not everybody can. And so we think that veterinarians, that people still deserve and their animals still deserve a chance to work with a veterinarian and do what they can for their animal, even if they can't afford all of the options that are out there.
Yeah, we had a cat who went through the cancer treatment, the full-blown treatment. It was $4,000 or $4,500, somewhere in there, $4,000 or $5,000. And this is some years back now. So it's a costly procedure. I always think about how hard it is to get into vet school. I mean, the turndown rate in vet school is higher than it is for med school in a lot of places.
There's so fewer vet schools than there are med schools. It's harder to get in, yeah.
And very costly, so veterinarians deserve to be paid for what they do, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about, and probably the cancer treatments, are those the most costly? What are the most costly procedures? Cancer's got to be right up there.
Cancer's definitely right up there. You know, radiation therapy, which we do for animals, is quite expensive. Some of the imaging options, so we can do CT scans or MRI scans, and I think that another expensive diagnosis for animals to have is for some neurologic problems. They might have, just like humans can have a slipped disc, dogs can have similar problems, and that ends up, you know, having a lot of imaging done, just like people do. So you might have an MRI to try and figure out where that is, other tests to make sure that that animal is healthy before it goes in for surgery to correct that that slipped disc. So that can be quite expensive as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Thousands of dollars, yeah.
So what does, I don't know how to say this, what does vet care that's considered affordable look like, and how do people go about finding it?
That's a great question. And so I think certainly certainly working with your veterinarian, if you already have a veterinarian, you know, veterinarians are obligated to offer, you know, what we call kind of the standard of care, the treatment option that we know is going to be the best and the most likely to result in the longest survival and the best outcome, if you will. And the same goes with diagnostic options. When we talk about, well, gosh, you know, your animal hasn't been eating, they've been vomiting or having diarrhea, and it's maybe the first time that animal has that problem, you know, a veterinarian, I think any veterinarian would recognize, well, it's fine to treat that sort of symptomatically. Let's make sure that your pet's dewormed. Let's make sure that it's not kind of a straightforward dietary indiscretion, if you will, that they haven't eaten something that's upset their stomach. But if that happens for, you know, three or four days, it continues on and goes on for a couple of weeks. I'll use my own dog as an example again. She had an upset stomach. I treated her sort of symptomatically, and then it continued. And so I said, well, I need somebody who's not her mother to take care of her. And I took her in and had an opportunity to talk with my veterinarian about, well, should we do an ultrasound to check and see if something's going on inside her intestines? Should we run some blood work and see if maybe something's going on with her liver or kidneys, or maybe her blood count is mixed up? And so kind of talking through what diagnostic tests do you choose and how do you prioritize those tests, I think that's part of what every veterinarian should do with their clients. So you don't have to go and do all of the things that they're recommending if you can't afford them. So that's kind of one option, is to work with your veterinarian and talk about what options they have and what they would recommend. If you can't, if it's too expensive to do all of the things, then let's try and put our money towards treatment options that are reasonable based on what we know. So we may not be able to afford to get a diagnosis, but it's reasonable to say, well, let's try this antibiotic or let's try this particular medication to see how it goes. There are also absolutely low-cost clinics, and I think Madison is unique in that I think there's several different low-cost clinics in addition to WISCARES. Precision is one, and there's a clinic that used to be called SPAMI, and I'm forgetting now. I can't remember what they have changed their name to recently. So there's a few options right in the Madison area as well. I don't know if that helps. It's a tough question to answer, Larry.
If there are low-cost veterinary clinics, and if you know of one or a part of one, I hope you join in and let us know about those around the state, because people, I'm sure, would be interested. Number to call, by the way, For that, or if you just have a question, I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, let us know that way, or tell us what your question is. Email to ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Pet insurance. Some pet owners may consider pet insurance maybe to save money. What should people know here?
So the American Veterinary Medical Association has a website, avma.org, and they actually offer some insight into different pet insurance companies. I think pet insurance is a really great idea if you can afford it. So I'm glad you asked. When I see in my practice at the School of Veterinary Medicine at UW Veterinary Care, when we have clients that have pet insurance, it makes an enormous difference in their ability to follow through on some of the treatment options that we offer. I think the typical amount that the insurance company covers is about 80% of the cost. So you still may end up spending a fair bit of money on part of the care and certainly on purchasing the insurance. But for some of these more catastrophic things, Larry, that you and I have been talking about, cancer treatments or major surgeries, or, you know, even in the case of an emergency visit, you know, goodness knows, sometimes animals get out of the house and they get hit by a car or they get in a fight with another animal and they need emergency care. And that's an unexpected bill that pet insurance can absolutely help with. So I would definitely urge people to take a look at the AVMA website. And there's actually a whole page there that are resources for pet owners, and some really great tips are there.
And of course, if the people that you're treating aren't in a position to be able to afford pet insurance, I'm wondering, how do you, knowing the costs that we've just been talking about, how are you able to afford, or how is your clinic able to afford the kind of care that you can give, and just sounds like excellent care across a broad range of things? I'm sure you must rely on donors and, well, tell us about it.
Yes. So that's a great question. How do we manage to do what we do? So the clinic, WISCARES Clinic on 1402 Emil Street, is a full-service veterinary clinic. It's a general practice, if you will. So we don't have specialists that work there. We don't have radiation therapy. We can perform surgeries. We can perform dental procedures, you know, tooth cleaning. We have an X-ray machine. We have an ultrasound machine. So it's a very basically outfitted, minimal veterinary clinic. And we have some funding and support from the School of Veterinary Medicine and University of Wisconsin. And we go out and hit the streets and do outreach. We write grants. We have been funded, as I mentioned before, by PetSmart. We work with the Pets for Life program to help provide some funding for some of our clients. We have received funding from Banfield, and we're always writing grants. We're always soliciting donations. We do have a nonprofit organization called the Friends of Whiskers, and that organization is also growing and starting to help fundraise to support the clinic. And then just an enormous number of industry friends and sponsors that have done in-kind support for some of the medications that we use, for the pet food that I mentioned. DECRA is another organization that industry that provides medications. And for our students, it's an opportunity for them to learn about these products and understand pros and cons of different medications, different foods, different vaccinations. And our clients do end up working with veterinary students. So it's an amazing learning opportunity for our students because they do all the communication. You know, they're in their fourth year of their training program. They're about to graduate. For them to be able to have, you know, be responsible for all of the interactions with the client, certainly always under the supervision of a veterinarian. A veterinarian is always looking at every single patient that comes through. But that is another way that we justify being sure. able to offer lower prices than certainly what happens at the vet school. At the vet school, at UW Veterinary Care, every client is interacting with a veterinarian, typically a specialist, and it's a very different system, an outstanding system. I'll say I'm very proud of it, and I recognize that to be creative and to give our students an excellent learning opportunity and to give folks a chance to have great care for their pets, this is a wonderful opportunity.
And I'm wondering, too, if, let's say, somebody wants to sort of cheat. They, in a way, they have money, but they make themselves look like they're needy and come in for... how do you decide who gets treatment and who does not?
Yeah, that is a great question. That's one of the foundational questions that we discuss as our Whiskers leadership team discusses. So we, as I mentioned before, we have a social worker who is part of our clinic, and we have social work students that are also there. And every year, folks that are clients of ours talk to our social workers at least once a year and verify that, this is my income, this is my living situation. We recognize that there's going to be people that want to kind of game that system and may not be truthful. And there may be a reason why people choose to not be truthful. That is, there are other things in their life that are that have made them believe that this is an okay way to live. And you know, it's not really within our capabilities to change that about them. So we certainly don't ask people to be card-carrying non-domiciled people. You know, that we don't want to go there. And we do expect people to have a conversation with our social worker and to be accountable for themselves. So do we think sometimes people lie to us? You know, I think in this world, that would be a safe guess. And do we try to meet people where they are and work with them the best we can? That's kind of what we end up trying to do.
Dr. Ruth Ann Chun, our guest today, clinical professor at UW School of Veterinary Medicine, co-founder of the Whiskers Clinic in Madison, which is a community veterinary clinic for low-income and homeless families. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking with Dr. Ruth Ann Chun, clinical professor at the UW School of Veterinary Medicine. She co-founded the Whiskers Clinic in Madison, which is a community veterinary clinic for low-income and homeless families. Join in the number 800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. And just a quick reminder, you could join WPR today in about, maybe an hour and a half or so, about 1:15, for live coverage of the 2022 State of the Tribes Address. It will come from the Assembly Chambers in the Wisconsin State Capitol. And this year's address will be given by President Shannon Holsey of the Stockbridge Muncie Band of the Mohican Nation. The 2022 State of the Tribes address today at about 1:15 on Wisconsin Public Radio, and you can also hear it at WPR.org. Questions for our guest today, Dr. Ruth Ann Chun. Lots of callers online. Let's go to Marcus in Milwaukee. Marcus, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. So my uncle lives out of state, and towards the time that he was getting close to retiring, one of his dogs ended up getting sick, and he ended up, obviously money was tight. And so he ended up, he found a clinic that was a city away. It was about a 45-minute hour drive, he said, where it was actually just veterinary students, and they took and were able to handle most of what it was. He had to pay a portion towards, I forget what the test was for, but yeah, and then the medication obviously got discounted through them. I was just wondering if there's anything like that that's in the Milwaukee area.
Thanks, Marcus. Yeah, for that question, is there a similar type of clinic to WisCares in the Milwaukee area? Not to my knowledge. The vet school is in Madison, and I know that the Pets for Life program is in Milwaukee, but does not necessarily, they don't have a clinic on site that I am aware of. So that's a great question.
Yeah, and if somebody is listening from the Milwaukee area who might happen to know that there is one, by please do call in and let us know for sure. So stay listening, Marcus. Brian in Bear Creek, on to you. Hi, Brian.
Hi. I had a question. I've got a 5.5-month-old female lab that I use for hunting a lot, and she's an inside dog and everything. But I had a problem one time with her back hip. They thought it dislocated. She was holding it up all the time on the trip, and then all of a sudden it seemed like it might have popped back in, and she was basically, we keep hunting, but it turned out that she just fights. The main question is that she fights when you try to cut her nails and stuff, and I'm worried about that knee joint. She fights so much, I'm worried about her hurting, re-injuring it. She's been good for like probably 3 years, hasn't had a problem with it. And I'm wondering if there's a alternative to getting those nails cut when she fights so much and she could dislocate that. We've been actually knocking her out, but the vet said that that's bad form when you knock them down too often. And I'm wondering, is there a good alternative because she fights so much getting her nails cut?
That's a great question. How do you work with a dog that hates to have its nails trimmed? And I know that you are not alone in that. I think there's a lot of dogs that really dislike having their nails trimmed. I think the answer beyond sedating them, as your vet's been doing, certainly that is an option that's got some limitations over time. The other option is not necessarily a quick fix, but it is a gradual sort of acclimation and readjustment of your dog getting used to having their feet handled. So as they're lying, sleeping or resting, or even as you're just petting them, just sort of conditioning them to being comfortable having their feet held and having their feet and toes manipulated without clipping them. And so this might be something that you do over weeks to months with them, and also getting them used to the clippers. A lot of folks actually will use a Dremel a Dremel tool to sand them down rather than clipping them. And some dogs actually are much better with that than with a clipper because, of course, what they worry about with the clipper is if you quick them, if you cut through the actual tissue in their nail and don't cut just the dead portion of the nail that's been grown out.
But it's a long process. But it's a good process. I mean, I this dog is 5.5 years old. It's going to be around a long time.
Yeah.
I think a certified animal behaviorist might be able to come and provide some help or, you know, getting started or through the whole process, depending on what you could afford. But it certainly could give you a hand in that.
Yeah, Larry, that's a great, another great suggestion. Thank you.
Good luck, Brian. Thanks a lot for calling. John in St. Germain, will you turn to you next? Hi, John.
Hi. Thanks a lot for bringing up this topic on your show. I think it's a very good idea. And my comments are mainly about pet insurance. I heard you discussing it just a little while ago. I have a little cockapoo named Guinness, and he has a lot of health problems. A few years ago, before he developed these health problems, I bought health insurance because I had friends who were having all these catastrophic things happen to their dogs. And I find that, you know, I'm on a fixed income, and I have to pay quite a bit every month for the health insurance. You can hear my dog in the background. I'm sorry. But I have to pay quite a bit. And I find that the health insurance companies are really, really slow, you know, in reimbursing me. They, of course, take their cut, which I expect, but they're just so slow in reimbursing me. It hurts because I just, you know, I only make so much money every month. And the other comment I have about it is, you know, in considering maybe changing health insurance, you suddenly realize you're up against the wall because all the conditions he has, like his worst condition is diabetes. He has pretty severe diabetes. It suddenly becomes a pre-existing condition. So a new health insurance company wouldn't cover that because they generally don't cover pre-existing conditions. So that becomes a problem as well.
Hmm. Thanks, John. Comments, Dr. Chun?
Yeah, John, those are the same things that we struggle with human health care and insurance. Those pre-existing conditions are tough. And, you know, I think insurance companies, just like in human health care, they are what they are. You do ultimately have some benefit because you get some money back, but I'm sure there's red tape involved and filling out of forms and verification of estimates and costs, and it's a whole other business. So I'm sure that there are others that share your frustrations and ultimately also recognize that there still are benefits to the insurance for pets.
And probably it's, you know, his point about pre-existing conditions, that is definitely true. So thinking about buying insurance, typically I would assume the dog has to have, it's probably best if your dog has been shown to be healthy by a veterinarian.
Yeah.
Or your cat or whatever.
Yes. And certainly that, you know, it's not just small animals that get dogs and cats that are insured. Certainly horses, I think, are another species that are commonly insured because of the high value that they have.
Yeah, for sure. John, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. We received a comment from a listener wondering, can pets be organ donors?
Oh, that's a great question. The short answer is no. There are very few veterinary clinics, very few specialty clinics in the U.S. or in the world that do organ transplants in animals. I think that the most common type of organ transplant that's done is a kidney transplant, and that's something that has been, I won't say perfected, but is more commonly done in cats. It's been performed in dogs, never with, I wouldn't say never, but it's a much more complicated procedure in dogs as far as recovery and actually outcome. So when we have a client that has a cat that needs a kidney transplant, you know, certainly there's a lot of qualifications, medical qualifications that we'd need to make sure there's no pre-existing other problems, that we think that the kidney failure is at a point where it is appropriate to do that transplant. And that's very much a specialty procedure. And in that situation, at least at our school, the requirement is that the the owner of the cat adopt a young, healthy cat and agree to take care of that young, healthy cat for the remainder of its life. And then we do cross-matching of blood to make sure that that animal would be a suitable donor. And if it's not a suitable donor, then another donor needs to be adopted and you know, agreed to be cared for the rest of its life. And then, you know, the process continues until, yes, we've got a suitable donor. And then the surgery can proceed. So it's a great question.
And there are some more great questions out there for our guests, and we will get to them. Dr. Ruth Ann Chun, clinical professor of oncology at the UW-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine, and she co-founded WISCARES, a clinic in Madison, community veterinary clinic for low-income and homeless families. And we'll take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with Dr. Chun, and you could ask your questions as well. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks for being with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about finding vet care and funding it, too. It's expensive. Dr. Ruth Ann Chun has an answer for some people, at least. She's a clinical professor at the UW School of Veterinary Medicine. In 2014, she co-founded the WISCARES Clinic in Madison, a community veterinary clinic for low-income and homeless families. Questions about vet care. How much do you spend every year on your pet's health? You can join in. The number to call is 800-642-1234, or you could send an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Had a good, interesting question about how can our pets be organ donors? There's some issues with that. But that happened right when we were breaking for our noon news. And I did want to mention, or maybe have you comment on, Dr. Chun, the fact that there can be blood donors, if I'm not mistaken, your dogs.
Yes. Thank you for asking that or bringing that up, Larry. So definitely we do have dogs can be blood donors, and dogs are oftentimes enrolled at the vet school. We have a blood donor program, and I know that we have a portion of the UW Veterinary Care website that is dedicated to talking about that. Animals need transfusions just like people do, and it is something that when we need it, there are times when those owners of the blood donor dogs might get called in to have their dog come in and save a life. So that's a great program that you can read more about on the UW Veterinary Care website, and just search for blood bank, and you can find out more about how your pet can become a donor.
A listener sent us a question. There are tick and flea prevention products out there for our dogs to take, this person says. Should dogs still take them in the winter? And how can pet owners approach saving money on these products as they add up in the long run?
That is another great question. So in the winter, I think when exposure to those creepy crawly things is low, I don't. It's not necessary to continue flea and tick control. So I think that's one way certainly to save money on doing that. Even though my dogs live in the city of Madison and are walked on a leash and they don't go even to the dog parks to run, they still get fleas. And so it is something that we do recommend during summer months to do external parasite control like flea and tick control because there's a possibility for exposure, and because those insects can carry serious diseases. So it's kind of an ounce of prevention. Yes, you're right. It is expensive to maintain those things. And I personally have not found, you know, sort of a home remedy or an off the over-the-counter remedy that I think is helpful. One thing that might be an alternative for you would be if your dogs don't have a lot of potential for exposure is a weekly bath. And, you know, regular, very close scrutiny of your animal, checking for fleas and ticks. It doesn't necessarily prevent them, but it will help you identify and maybe get rid of them if they are there.
Sandy from Sullivan wants to know if Whiskers, your clinic, does it accept medical equipment donations? She has a dog wheelchair she'd like to give.
That is really kind. Thank you for thinking of us. We don't really have storage space for something like that. There are, I will say, there are specialty clinics that have surgeons or neurologists that may be open to taking that kind of a donation. I know that our neurologists, because they work with so many dogs that have that type of problem, would turn around and donate that back to a client. So there would not be a fee if we had a donated object like that we could use. So Whiskers realistically could not take it, but there are probably other clinics in town in Madison area that would, including UW Veterinary Care. Thank you for offering that.
Yeah, that's great. We received a listener email from a first-time pet owner. Ruby the Labrador joined this listener's family during COVID, May of 2020, when she was 6 months old. When she was 6 months old, she was hit by a car, received excellent care at UW Veterinary. She made a full recovery. It cost $3,500. Involved several nights at the vet hospital, yep. Frequent bandage changes for wound care. Thankfully, this family was able to afford the cost and time to take Ruby for bandage changes as well.
Thank you for sharing that story. That is, you know, certainly, I think, sadly, a fairly common thing that happens. The young dogs, they get excited. If they get off leash and run, unfortunately, hit by car type scenarios are pretty common in veterinary medicine, and I'm so pleased to hear that she was able to, it sounds like, make a full recovery. Thanks for that shout out to us.
That's very cool. Thanks a lot for that email. By the way, you could email us too, ideas@wpr.org, or if you would like to phone in with a question, 1-800-642-1234 about your pet's health. 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Someone wondered, how does cancer treatment look like for a dog or a cat? Yeah, I guess we could throw that in too.
Sure. The treatment options that we have to treat cancer in animals are very, very similar to the treatment options that there are to treat the disease in people. I think one of the biggest differences that we recognize in veterinary medicine is that, that one, we want our patients home with their people for as much as possible during the cancer treatment. So we want them feeling hopefully as normal as possible so that they can be at home and enjoying their life with their person, because you can't really explain to a dog or cat what's happening and why it's happening. So while we might use chemotherapy in dogs, a dog size. So if we have a 60-pound dog, an individual who's 60 pounds would get a much higher dose of chemotherapy than what we give to dogs or cats relative to weight. And we don't combine drugs nearly as aggressively as they do in human medicine. We recognize that many of the cancers that we treat with chemotherapy, we won't be able to cure. And we are not willing to sacrifice quality of life for being more aggressive with chemotherapy, because we know it's not necessarily going to result in survival, surviving the cancer. So when we talk about putting an animal on chemotherapy, yes, we use the same types of drugs. The treatment protocol for lymphoma in a dog uses the same types of drugs they might use for lymphoma in a person. But again, we combine the drugs less aggressively, and we give lower doses because we know we can prolong survival. We know we can put that disease into remission, and we want that animal home with its person while it's going through its treatment protocol. Similar with surgery or radiation therapy, there are times when we can cure an animal with surgery, cure an animal of cancer with surgery, and in those situations, it might be as aggressive a surgery as a human might undergo. Our neurologists have done brain surgery to remove brain tumors in animals. And with radiation therapy, again, it is a little bit more similar to what we might experience for a human going through radiation therapy. Certainly the drugs, the treatment units for radiation therapy, the tools that we use to do surgery, maintenance of the operating theaters to do surgery in animals is the same types of rigorous quality and oftentimes the same units that we would use, you would see in a human clinic. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit of a broad.
Yeah, I know the radiation therapy is, I mean, it does involve, let's say, a cat. That can involve some time for the cat in a almost a lead-lined box or something after that therapy.
So what you're talking about, Larry, is iodine-131 therapy for hyperthyroidism. And that is the same way we would treat a person. Human medicine would treat an individual with hyperthyroidism, and we can do that in cats. It's actually a pretty common procedure in veterinary medicine to treat a cat that's been diagnosed with hyperthyroidism with an injection of radioactive iodine. So that's I-131. And state regulations for safety around that type of a radioactive substance vary. And in the state of Wisconsin, cats are required to be hospitalized in a fairly isolated area of the hospital because they're emitting a fair amount of radiation therapy. And as their body clears that over a few days, and that the amount of radiation that they're eliminating from their body drops again, then they're allowed to go back home. But it's not quite a lead line box, but it is a very secure, thick walled room in the hospital that those animals need to stay in.
Stick a call, Jillian in Superior. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I have a approximately 16-year-old rescue chihuahua. She's a deer-headed. She weighs just under 6 pounds. And when I rescued her about 8 years ago, we had no problem with eating, acclimating to her diet. She's short-haired. The fur came back in better. She is spunky. People think she's a puppy. She drinks water. She barely eats, though. I have tried everything. There's a dog bakery we have over in Duluth that there's a Stella's stew that if I doctor it up with grilled chicken breast, she'll maybe pick at that once every other day. I am just wondering if there's any suggestions. I have her to the vet regularly. Blood levels are good, but I know she's old. She can't go outside in this weather. Just looking for any suggestions.
And does she have, what are her teeth like?
Oh, I had to have those pulled when I rescued her.
So she has no teeth. Okay.
Right. And barely a little beak. Yeah.
That's a great question, Larry, and a really, I think, a wonderful question. Thank you for rescuing her. She sounds like she's had a long and happy life with you, and it's helpful to know that she's been to the veterinarian and she's healthy. She's just old, and so I think it sounds like she eats when she wants to, and you have to kind of tempt her to do that. Is that right? Oh, is she not there?
Yes, she eats.
Okay.
She drinks water, and I have to entice her to eat.
Okay. So what I'm wondering is, I know that as individuals age and become really elderly, whether you're a human or an animal, oftentimes your calorie intake really starts to drop. And so what I would suggest is that if you're working with your veterinarian and they feel that she's healthy, that she doesn't have anything inside her mouth that's making it painful or uncomfortable for her to eat, and that when she does eat, she doesn't throw it back up, she's got normal stools. Part of me wonders, is her calorie requirement dropping because she's such an elderly dog, and because she's such a small dog, that maybe she just doesn't have that same type of calorie requirement she did when she was younger.
Yeah. Is that a time when you just leave the bowl out there all the time, and Dr. Chun, and so that it's available if she wants it, and if she doesn't, well, it sits there?
Well, certainly having fresh food available at all times, I think, is a really important thing, and so thanks for bringing that up. I also wonder how much what she used to be like in terms of her eating habits.
She was excellent. The shelter that I picked her up from, they were just giving her the small bites. What was that? Blue Diamond, I believe. And she was just gobbling that up, no problem, without her teeth.
Do you still give that to her? Or
no, she stopped being able to eat that some years ago. And so it's been a few plus years, 5 years, where I've been trying different soft foods and stews, had her to a few veterinarians as well, too, for different suggestions. And then finally, the Stella stew about last September, she just started gobbling up. But at the dog bakery, they suggested that maybe they're just getting bored. It's also winter time, too, and they're not active. And her age, the fact that we think she's about 16, that's several vets consensus when I rescued her, but she could be much older than that too, because she is such a healthy little thing.
Yeah. It sounds like you're working with a lot of great people that are giving you good suggestions on how to tempt her appetite. And I don't have any other suggestions beyond kind of what we've talked about. Especially if you feel like her attitude and her activity level are fine, and she's not having vomiting or diarrhea or pain when she's eating.
Yeah. I might go back to Blue Diamond and try mushing it up or something and see.
It sounds like it's been a few years since she's been able to eat that, but it might be worth a try. I know sometimes dogs may not even chew it thoroughly before they swallow, so that might be another thing just to try.
Yeah.
Those
wouldn't cost a lot to give it a try. Anyway, Jillian, it sounds like you're a great owner, though, and you're doing everything you can for your Chihuahua, and I applaud you for that. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it very much. Well, you know, I've had some shows where I've had veterinarians on the show, and people have called in with their dog or their pet, their cat, their dog that has cancer. And they have really, I can remember once where the vet and I were both crying on the air, and I had a hard time even closing the show. It was how do people cope with if their pet has cancer and other type of illness like that?
Wow, that's a great question. And it can be so difficult to know that, a beloved companion is at the end of their life or has a very devastating diagnosis. And I think that most veterinary oncologists recognize that and talk through some of those emotions with their clients, understanding that this is a difficult time. And especially when you're so attached to the animal and emotional, it can be very difficult to make even decisions about what kind of treatment options to pursue and what's reasonable for your situation, what's not reasonable. I think those are things that most veterinary oncologists or veterinarians in specialty medicine and in general practice too are there for, to work with their clients. I know that sometimes it's more than that. Sometimes there are other things that make this situation difficult, and I think there are wonderful grief counselors in the community, or other, you know, wellness counselors, well-being counselors that people should consider turning to, talking with friends and family, talking with, a religious leader as well, maybe something that would be helpful. So there's that, the loss of that companion, or the anticipation even sometimes of the loss of the companion, or the need for support as an animal is going through treatment, can be very real. And just as it is when a human companion is going through that. So, Larry, thank you for bringing that up and giving me a little nudge to talk about what are some options, both with your veterinarian and in the community, and how to get support to face going through some of these challenging situations.
Certainly challenging for everyone, including the clients that you deal with at in your clinic at the WISCARES Community Veterinary Clinic for, here we got, low-income and homeless families. And for people who would like to learn more, let's just go back and repeat that. How do people, maybe they want to donate, or maybe they just want to learn more about your group that provides this care for low-income and homeless families, where do they go?
Yeah, thank you. So WISCARES has a Facebook page. It's WISCARES, WISCARES. And you can find us on Facebook. We also have a WISC.edu website, WISCARES.WISC.edu. So both sites, our Facebook page has fairly regular updates on what's happening at the clinic, and there's options there to donate. And then our website, of course, also has information about our clinic and some of the stories that we've shared as well here, and more than that. So we'd love to have you find us on Facebook and check out our website.
Well, you're doing some wonderful work. I want to thank you so much, Dr. Chun, for being with us today and talking with us about your organization. And appreciate it. And I hope we have a chance to visit again. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Larry, for having me. We really appreciate it.
Dr. Ruth Ann Chun, clinical professor of oncology in the UW School of Veterinary Medicine, and she co-founded Wisconsin Companion Animals Resources Education and Social Services, the acronym WISCARES. It's a community vet clinic for low-income and homeless families. They're doing some great, great work. And she's a great person, too. I could tell that. Haven't met her in person, but sort of did today on the phone and on the air. Great to have her here. Tomorrow, we'll talk about outdoor sports and how they can help families, help kids become healthy adults. That's tomorrow. In the meantime, stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller.